The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to the Home Show podcast. This is News Talk's production about homes, housing, interiors and architecture. Coming up today, a top fashion designer, Helen McAlinden, in studio to chat about her luxurious bedding range for Foxford. With huge new grants available to convert over the shop premises, we'll get the lowdown on what's involved. Sports broadcaster Jackie Hurley on her new Tinder matchmaking service for home buyers, and metalhead Arlene McIntyre bringing the bling inside. If you'd like to get involved in the Home Show podcast, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at any time during the week at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, and you'll find me over on Instagram, SineadRyan100. Helen McAlinden is one of Ireland's best known fashion designers and is celebrating 25 years in business this year, but she also has a lovely range of interior and home textiles in collaboration with Mayo's Foxford brand, and she joins me in studio now. You're very welcome to the Home Show, Helen.
An absolute pleasure to be here.
Now, the pivot to interiors. I remember interviewing Paul Costello, the late, great Paul Costello, and he
was so great, wasn't he?
Oh, he was amazing.
I remember as a kid looking at what he'd done, and I remember having my first grown-up outfit, which was a Paul Costello suit back in 1980-something. But he was fabulous.
He's such a wonderful fashion designer, and he understood women and their shape and what they wanted and all of that. Pockets, sleeves. But when I was talking to him about his pivot into interiors, which he had for the Dunn's range.
Yes, he did a fantastic range.
A beautiful range, and still, I think his son is now running it. But he wasn't really able to entirely answer the question about what moved him to get into that. So I'm going to ask you the same question, because you're a successful fashion designer. Women adore your clothes.
I hope so.
Well, they do. And you have this move now into textiles.
Well, I've actually been working with Foxford for a long time, since, you know, almost 20 years. So it was a very quick pivot for me. And actually, I trained as a textile designer. So I kind of pivoted into fashion.
Okay, interesting.
And then I've come back to textiles and home. But in a funny kind of way, I think design is design. Taste is taste. Mm. And
fabric is fabric.
Fabric is fabric. And my sort of design philosophy flows from one thing into the other. I really, really love doing homewares and interiors.
And I'm wondering, in that design process, because you're dealing with, okay, you might have maybe a duvet or a pillow or a napkin or something that's kind of on a small scale to be viewed, to be looked at, whereas when you're wearing clothing, you know,
it's different.
It is different.
I mean, clothing is, in a funny kind of way, more architectural. The process of doing clothing patterns is completely different from the flat design process of a print. But then in home textiles, it's not just about the surface pattern. It's about developing the fabric, or working with our partners, our downstream manufacturing partners, to develop a really good fabric which is comfortable, a comfortable cotton or a comfortable linen or a comfortable linen tencel, something that's really great to sleep in if it's for bed linen, or something that touches and feels and works. It's like all design. It's about good design has to be fit for function.
Mm. And that tactileness that's required. I mean, nobody, well, hopefully, is going to come over and feel your dress and rub your fabric and all that.
It's different.
But when you're getting into a bed, or you're holding a napkin away,
when you're getting into your own dress, you do feel your fabric. I think touch is an important thing. But in terms of getting into bed, and after all, we spend almost a third of our lives in bed. So I think it's really, and it's also part of well-being, isn't it? Because sleep is so important.
Yes.
And we're much more conscious of that now than we used to be.
Yeah.
So it's not only the visual, it's the texture, it's a whole ambience of creating something really comfortable and conducive to something that looks good and feels good. And
you mentioned there the fabrics. You mentioned cotton, you mentioned linen, you mentioned Tencel. Now, that's not one I'm familiar with. So no. Talk to me about what that is, because you're showing me, Helen has brought in a smorgasbord of her beautiful designs here for me to touch and feel and look at. But this one in particular, it feels like it's a very loose kind of tactile fabric, and I'm hugging it nearly here.
Well, that one you have in your hand is called our ochre linen, the Tencel, linen and Tencel stripe. It's a duvet, and it's a brand new fabric for us, and it's a relatively new fabric.
You do feature stripes quite a lot. It's a motif that you've come back to time and time again, along with the florals. Tell us about some of the other items that you have in the Helen McAlinden collection from Oxford.
We sort of develop a wardrobe for your bed. So if we have a vintage-inspired floral, which we have in our new design called Maeve. Most of our designs have girls' names because we got fed up trying to describe those designs. But Maeve is a vintage nostalgic floral with a sort of a pinky mauve little country cottage floral, which we team with a diagonal stripe in the same colour on a neutral ground. You can break up the sweetness of a floral, and if you wanted to develop or use the range just with the stripe, you can do that. So it means that within the same purchase, you can actually change the look of your bed. So and sometimes we would put the stripe on one side of a duvet and the floral on the other.
And it is a lovely mix, because I think people can be nervous about mixing different styles.
Well, we try to do the mix for them.
And you've done it for them, so they don't need to worry about it. And you're saying, this works, and that's fine.
Well,
so some of these...
It's a bit of an editorial curated view.
Indeed. So talk to me then about one of the issues which bothers a great deal of people when it comes to bed linen in particular, and it's the whole idea of thread count.
Thread count is hugely overhyped.
Is it?
Because it's not... I mean, technically what thread count is, it's the number of ends of thread in a square inch. Our main range is a 300 thread count, which I think is a really good, practical quality. And it's not simply about the number of threads, it's about the quality of the yarn. But it's about the quality of the fibres as much as the thread count.
Well, that's good news, because it means we can all relax a bit over the old thread count.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter.
Sometimes something with 1,000 thread count will be very heavy.
Stiff and heavy
warm.
and doesn't allow it maybe to breathe because of that.
And quite stiff.
Okay, now your clothing brand, of which I'm lucky enough to own two pieces, one of which, by the way, is a beautiful red woolen coat which belonged to my mother. And it is pristine.
I've been doing this clothing for a long time.
It is pristine. And now she's much shorter than I am, so I kind of wear it as a long jacket. It is as good now as the day she bought it.
That's called sustainable.
And it is sustainable because these are pieces that last. And I know that the brand is based on simplicity, timelessness, and enduring. So how important is that in your life, in your home, for instance?
I don't like decoration for the sake of decoration. I think it's like mathematics. The most simple solution is always the most elegant solution. So I think it's important in my home. But I suppose I started life, and fashion has changed, as a minimalist. My home is now maybe comfortable minimalism. There's a lot of layering with life.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for a home. You don't want things to be sterile. I like my books around me. I like my paintings around me. I like things that you have accumulated. A home should be comfortable, lived in. But my basic taste is probably for simplicity,
So in terms of colour then, the easiest way to get that is by a range of neutrals that aren't too busy and there's not too much fuss going on.
Right now, if you look at what's trending in terms of design, we're talking a lot about colour drenching. So, but deep colours are trending in terms of home decor.
Indeed.
Deep greens, deep terracottas. And we have to be, I have to know what trends are. But sometimes you know what they are, but you ignore them. So you're not, you have to be informed by trends, but not led by trends.
Are you then, is your view, look, this could be a fad rather than a trend?
Well, I think there's a big difference between hype and a trend. Hype, I mean, you and I have all been to things like fashion shows, which you've sat there and you thought, yeah, this is quite good. But you've looked at it on Instagram and you thought, God, this looks absolutely brilliant because everybody's edited, you know, put music behind it, dressed it up, and every PR has talked about it and there's a lot of hype and suddenly this becomes a thing. But that's not really a trend. A trend is something which is driven by culture, society, change. It's an evolution, not a revolution.
Mm. Mm.
I mean, we were in a whole minimalist thing for a long, long time.
The old hygge.
Before,
Danish, and, the Swedish,
and then
yeah.
we had a little bit of wabi-sabi and... And then we've moved. But these things take time and build on one another. Mm. And there's usually an action, you know, action and reaction. Right now, we are into quite a maximalist, quite a color-drenched thing. It's not my taste. But that's not to say it can't be done well. Mm. It can be done really well.
Mm. But you're sticking with the timeless and the ones we know and love, and they really are beautiful. You can find Helen McLinden's collection in Foxford, of course, in Mayo, and also in Arnott's. And do you have any in your own store, Helen, around the corner here?
We have a few of the woven throws.
Lovely.
Because, I mean, I started working for Foxford
doing
their woven throws, and they asked me to modernise the range, which I absolutely love doing. So the woven wool cashmere and lamb's wool throws, all woven and manufactured in Foxford.
Fantastic.
Really are a core part
they,
of
They
Foxford
are. We had Joe Queenan on actually a few months ago from Foxford because he had been the liquidator.
Yes, it's a great story. Foxford
it's
is
unbelievable.
The heritage of Foxford is a great story.
And it's long and it's timeless and they do what they do really, really well. So it seems like a collaboration made in heaven for you.
Yes, we've had our ups and downs, but I've really enjoyed working with Joe and with Foxford.
Indeed. All right. Well, Helen McLinden, the continued success on this range and on the home range. And I know it will all continue to be really, really productive for you and indeed for Foxford. Thank you for joining us on the Home Show today.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
Me.
Coming up after the break, how you can get your hands on €135,000 of free money to rescue an over-the-shop flat, and sports broadcaster Jackie Hurley on our new matchmaking service.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
Now, there's been a big push on adapting housing policy over the last few years to try and tackle the housing crisis. One that grabbed all the headlines was the planning easing on modular garden homes or beds in sheds, depending on your viewpoint. But another is probably a little bit more realistic and slipped under the radar in all the hype. Massive grants have been made available for converting flats over commercial premises, and there's a lot of cash on offer. Here to tell us more is Martin Markey, CEO of the Hardware Association of Ireland.
Thank you very much, Sinead.
Now, have we any idea of how many properties potentially there are out there that could be converted?
Yes, we have an idea of it. It's not an exact science by any stretch of the imagination, but we would have estimated in the Hardware Association, we did a number of surveys in a number of towns around the country, and we kind of put together a figure from that. So we estimated that there are about 30,000 units that could come back from above the shop being reconverted or readapted back to residential again. And even recently, in the last few weeks, Dublin City Council have come out with a report saying in the Greater Dublin area, there are about 16,000. Now, they're not solely above the shop. They're also including commercial commercial buildings. But it's got huge potential and can have a huge impact nationwide.
Now, when you say reconverted, that's appropriate because actually before kind of everybody wanted a three-bed semi in a suburb, lots and lots of people lived in flats above commercial premises.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was the 60s, the 50s, 60s, yep. 70s. It was completely normal.
Yes, yes. And we're quite different to our counterparts anywhere in the EU. If you go on holidays anywhere, if you go on business anywhere, you look at the town centres, the city centres, they're full of life.
Yeah.
And why are they full
of
life? Because they're full of people. Because people actually live in town centres and city centres. We kind of abandon them to a large extent in the 60s into the 70s, but there's huge potential, especially now when we look at the challenge that's facing us in terms of housing and the demand for housing.
Do you think, grants aside, I mean, the fact that we have to be persuaded to do it, is it like a cultural thing with Ireland? Because you're quite right, every other country, and certainly every other European capital, there are blocks of flats above pretty much every commercial street. What is it about us that we just want a three-bed semi with the front and back garden?
Well, because that's what we're presented with, and that is part of the culture, I suppose. But if you do look at, we did some research on this last year. We did a fairly extensive survey of property owners to find property owners of above the shop premises to find out what would incentivize them to bring them back to residential property. So the major finding of that was a financial incentive. Mm. Now, you might say, surprise, surprise, but we thought other things were going to come up.
Show me the money.
And Minister Brown has done that. The grants are very generous.
They are indeed. Yeah. Now, because, and we have to qualify by this, but there were always grants for this, but nobody bit. And it just wasn't, just people weren't biting and they weren't going ahead with it. So either it wasn't enough or it wasn't enough to cover some of the cost on it. So tell us a little bit, Martin, about how the over-the-shop grant works. What is it and what do you do?
Okay. Well, I just want to say a little thing about that, just something before that, because it probably follows on from the vacant home grant. And that has been a stupendous success around the country. There are now, at the end of 25, there were 16,000 applications, 12,000 had been approved, and over 3,000 homes were brought back to life last year. This year, we'd expect 5,000 to 6,000 around the country. So that's the empty home grant. So it's kind of building on that, and the culture is changing. So we're hoping that the above the shop grant will gain momentum. Mm. It's only recent, so the grants have only come out recently. Yep. It will take a wee bit of time. There will be some traction on it. There are a couple of things. One is that the local authorities are currently recruiting for extra vacant homes officers. So we need the personnel in place to make it happen. So we would be looking at the end of this year into next year before we would see numbers on it, I would think. But, but the numbers are huge.
So how will the grant work and how much is on offer?
Well, typically the grant, the qualification for the grant, the premises has to be built before 2008, which is largely everything in the country, I'd say, in terms of above the shops. And it has to be vacant for 2 years.
Okay.
So the grant is, if you can bring back one property, as in probably an apartment, I would think, or a flat or an apartment, it's 95K. And additional apartments or flats are 20K on top of that. So if you can bring back three, you get 135,000 of a grant.
I mean,
and
that's a lot.
And, well, wait a year. As well as that, you get $5,000 to do a consultancy inspection of it to see, is it viable? And if you can combine the grants, and there are many one-stop shops around the country. If you can combine the grants with the SEAI grant, you can get an extra 20,000 per unit. So potentially it's a very attractive proposition.
Now, on the basis, unlike the vacant home grant, which is available for properties which are not derelict, but also not quite, one would assume that if there is a working commercial premises underneath it, it must be structurally sound to begin with, because you wouldn't get insurance and it'd be difficult to have an impact on the business. So that's a lot of money for something that may, like, what kind of do you think fitting is involved, retrofitting is involved to bring that back? If the thing is structurally sound, are we talking then about kind of cosmetic rendering, kind of putting in your retrofitting your solar panels and your insulation and all that kind of thing? And how much would that cost on, say, above a hairdresser's or above a pub?
Well, I suppose one of the reasons that the grant is so generous because it has to tick all of those boxes. And there is additional factors there when you're readapting an above-the-shop property. There are issues with regard to building regulations, issues with regard to fire issues as well. So it does cost more. It's a more complicated and more complex project than, say, for example, rejuvenating an empty property in a field somewhere, for example, because there's other factors there as well. You have neighbours, you're in an urban environment, so it's the actual cost of building and the complexity of it.
And it could be in a terrace, so that adds a layer of complexity.
It could be in a terrace, exactly that. So it is a much more complex proposition, but nonetheless, the numbers here are very good. The potential here is very good.
Do you think you're sounding to me like you think this actually could be a game changer because of the amount of properties that are around and the value of these grants? Are they available? I mean, given the criteria, okay, nobody's been there for 2 years and it was built before 2008. Is this grant available to anybody? Or would you kind of shy away from it if it's not for the faint-hearted? Like the way you would say, don't do a project. you have to be experienced.
You do. And I would say definitely in this instance. But there are plenty of companies. There are plenty of companies, one-stop shops, who specialize in project management.
For example,
one of our members, Core Insulation, they specialize in this. So they would be my first port of call, really, is to speak to them if you are thinking of that. And there are others around the country as well. If you're thinking of it, to see, is it viable? And is it viable for you as well?
Yeah. What's the issue with title? Because, you know, you might have a land, you might have an owner who owns the entire structure or owns the whole unit upstairs and downstairs, and the commercial premises is renting, or you could have them owning it and having this space above it. I mean, it's always an issue, really, with space like that. Who owns it? Who has the title? Is it possible, or maybe this is outside your kind of bailiwick, but is it possible for an owner to say, I'm going to sell the downstairs to the butcher and I'm going to sell the upstairs to Joe Bloggs to refit it?
Yeah, it is somewhat outside my expertise, above my pay grade as such. But I suppose there's been a couple of factors. When we're talking about the 30,000 coming back to life, we're talking about what we would call the first fruits, the low-hanging fruit. So we're kind of excluding those that would be tied up in legal entails, whether it be probate or some other complexity. So we're putting them aside. We're saying, don't touch them. So there's still 30,000 units that can be done without touching them.
So that's a lot of potential then.
Huge.
And, you know, particularly in rural areas, Martin, I'm thinking in towns and villages, which have seen, I mean, if you only have to drive through really any of them to see more boarded up and vacant properties. So this is something that you would see as a positive. You welcome it. And what would you say to people who say, gosh, I'd love to give that a go?
Well, I'd be in contact with the local council to get the full details on what's happening there. And they'll be able to advise you on what to do and how to do it.
All right. Tread carefully and line up your ducks. Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
All right. OK, well, Martin Markey, CEO of the Hardware Association of Ireland, thanks for that. And that great research that was done actually on that. And hopefully it might be just one more kind of Lego block on our housing crisis and get people involved. All right. Well, listen, Martin, thanks a million for joining us on the
Home
Show.
Thanks very much, Sinead.
Now, we know her best as RTE sports broadcaster, commentating from the sideline, giving us scores and punditry on GAA matches. But Jackie Hurley has recently set up a property business with a twist, matching upsizers with downsizers. And she joins me now on the line to tell me more. Jackie, very welcome to the Home Show. It's called Good Neighbour, but it's Tinder for house hunters.
I know. My husband wasn't too gone on the concept when I suggested that to him initially, because he felt maybe people might get the wrong impression. But look, that's what it is, really. We're just trying to match people, because I think what we've noticed, Sinead, really, is that lots of people want to stay in their areas for all the right reasons. So if we can help them to do that, then I think that's a win-win for all.
What made you think of doing this? It's a bit of a left turn from sports punditry.
It definitely is. Do you know what? It's been one of those things that was in our heads for years. You know those conversations that you have over the dinner table? You're thinking, okay, what do I want to do? What are the problems in the world? And you just end up having those life conversations. And I just kept coming back to it. The housing crisis is something that so many people in Ireland have conversations about at different points. And it was just one of those things I thought, look, this is not going to solve the housing crisis, but it might actually just help to bring some houses on stream that might help some people. I guess I'd noticed it with my own parents. They were trying to downsize for years and they really couldn't find something suitable. They really didn't want to move out and be left renting. And that was a big problem, which I've noticed with a lot of my friends as well, who are having growing families and just couldn't find the right houses. So this was something that was in our lives on a weekly, on a daily basis. We were hearing the same problems. And I just thought, what if we could just set these people up and match? Because I noticed when we were buying our house, we were upsizing ourselves. We were moving from a two-bed into a four-bed house, and we found this beautiful house that we now live in and we love. But when we were buying it, the lady who was selling it had this beautiful old oak table. And I remember saying to the estate agent at the time, would you mind asking the vendor if she would sell me the table? I'd love to buy it off her. And the estate agent came back to me. She said, actually, look, the lady selling the house would love to give you the table as a gift because they had many happy memories around the table and she would love for you to have it. And that always stuck with me. And I thought, you know what? In the middle of it all, we all just genuinely want to help people. And I really believe that. I believe in the altruism of Irish society. And I felt like a small gesture like that would actually go a long way. And I actually think that's a big part of the process here, that a lot of the downsizers would love to help a young family as well. So I hope that that's part of the process. I know it's a big leap for some people, but I would like to think that there's a big part of people that would love to help as well.
Okay. And look, altruism aside, you're still looking at a legal transaction. There's all kinds of forms and, you know, surveyors and banks and all that kind of thing involved. How does it work? I mean, you have somebody, and we've dealt with, God knows, downsizing and the whole right sizing, I think we're supposed to call it, on the show before, because it's very difficult for older people to find somewhere suitable in their locality and get finance to move. Yeah. So some of the banks are changing that business model at the moment. But how does it work in practice? So you have somebody who lives in a big family home and they've completed their family and they're empty nesters and maybe they want to move to something smaller locally. And then you've got a family who are squeezed in their smaller house and they need to move up. Is it just trying to locate those two people in a local area?
Yeah, so that's part of it. Basically, what we would do is, you know, for anybody who comes on the platform, because there is obviously all those legal entities, we will still only represent one side so that it is still very much a fair transaction for everybody. Everybody's houses will be independently valued. And let's just say you're a downsizer or a right-sizer, as you rightly call it, and your house is worth 750,000 and my house is worth 500,000. That means there's 250,000, give or take, in the difference. Both of those houses will be independently valued, and then the upsizer will give that 250 grand or whatever they decide between the two of them. We'll help them to negotiate whatever that price is between the two of them that both of them are willing to accept. They will do the deal themselves. They'll speak, they'll go, they'll chat, they'll see each other's homes. It'll be a very community-based transaction. And then whatever they decide the price is between the two houses, the upsizer will give that to the downsizer. So the downsizer will get their new house, but also they'll be able to release that equity from their own home, which really is what a lot of them want to do at this stage of their lives as well. They just don't want to get caught up in a chain where they're having to rent somewhere else and waste that money. So I hope by doing this, everybody moves on the same day so nobody is waiting. There's no chains and there's none of that lost time.
Right. And like in terms of then your role in this, like to what extent are you're the matchmaker here, obviously, but what is the difference? What do you bring to it that, say, people can't just go on myhome.ie or daf.ie and look up two or three bed homes in their area or five bed homes in their area and do it in the normal way? Are you identifying people who haven't yet gone on that platform?
Exactly. Yeah. And like for us, that's a big part of it. It's really just trying to find people who maybe were thinking about selling their homes, but they're not quite ready yet because they haven't found something they want. I've seen this with my own parents, with my husband's parents, with a lot of our neighbors where they've gone through this, where they might have found something, but then they got outbid or they just, you know, weren't in that position to be able to go at that time. Whereas with this, it's really just trying to bring houses on stream that were never there before. People who maybe never thought about moving, so that maybe it's on the platform. And then when they do find something that they like, then they're ready to go. So really, that's probably the big part of it. Like, there's nothing to stop people being on a platform themselves at any time and trying to sell their house normally as well. They can also do that while they're with Good Neighbor. There's nothing to stop them doing both of them at the same time. And whichever happens to work first for them, then that's absolutely perfect by us.
Now, it's a business model, so you have to make money. How does the charging structure work?
So that was a big part of this. What I noticed with a lot of, I think, look, in any legal sale and in any transaction, there's a lot of costs that people are not aware of. One thing that we really wanted to make sure was that all the costs are up front. So the VAT is included in what you see. Basically, it's valued per your home. So let's just say if your home is worth €500,000, then you'll pay a fee of around €4,500, which includes VAT and all of your costs associated with sort of putting it on the platform, all of that stuff, getting your photographs taken, everything that would involve just, you know, getting the house on there. If it's something that, let's say, an estate agent is representing you. We do have a matching fee where if we're bringing a house to the party that an estate agent is representing, let's say maybe an upsizer, and we bring the downsizer to the party, there is a €499 matching fee. But really, they're the only fees. We'll only represent one side of the party, and then the other side will be a matching one. So that it's fair, because like it wouldn't be right or ethical for us to match both sides and to represent both sides, because we want it to be a fair deal as well.
Sure, and that's fair enough, and I think people will appreciate that. In terms of now your own experience, what brings you, what like, do you have experience in this area? Have you dealt with property in the past? Does your partner do this? Like, what is your kind of overall experience in this area?
Well, to be honest, that's why we have people who run the business who are estate agents and who have done, you know, we've got people who are involved in marketing, who are involved in sales, who are estate agents themselves, and they very much run the business day to day. I guess my role in this was, I was the founder, I was the person who came up with the idea. My husband is involved in property and has certainly done a lot of work in the background on this as well, and he would be a big driver of this. But essentially, we have people who run the business who know much more about property than I do, because I certainly don't want to be out first and foremost telling people what they know about the housing structure when I don't work in it on a day-to-day basis. People will obviously be aware I have another job that keeps me very busy, and I have no intention of stepping away from that either. I really just wanted to get this off the ground because I think it's a good thing that will help a lot of people, but I have experts that can tell me what we need to be doing rather than the other way around, that's for sure.
Sure. So who will benefit from this most, Jackie? I mean, you know, is it people who struggle to downsize? Because it seems to be a huge problem at the moment. People who've grown up all their lives in a particular neighbourhood or community or town or village, and they don't want to go more than, you know, a few kilometres away in their old age. And we know then that a lot of them are left living in oversized houses, they're underoccupied and very expensive.
Yeah, and that is the difficulty. And to be honest, even before we even launched the business, all of our market research, like we were out on the ground in shopping centres, walking around local golf clubs, community groups, bridge clubs, and all of our chats with those downsizers who might be, you know, finished working, they've obviously become empty nesters, you know, all of the things that we've talked about. They don't want to leave their local shops or their pharmacy or their golf clubs or any of that. And nor should they. You know, I guess in this country, we haven't really got to a point where we've built those sort of community spaces where there's communal grounds that they can go and live in. And maybe that is something that we will get to in the next 10 to 15 years. But for now, I guess, I think they're the people who might benefit most, because we're trying to offer them an alternative where there are younger families in their neighbourhood who would really love to be in their houses. And I'm sure that they might love to be in those smaller houses and apartments as well.
And
so
come here to
I'd
me.
Like to think that they're the group that will benefit the most.
They will. And listen, if it comes to it, are you going to go knocking on doors and saying, do you want to sell up? We have somebody up the road willing to buy.
Yeah, and we have. And genuinely, like, one of the things that we've noticed when people do come to us, we ask them straight out. We say, look, where would you like to go? Have you identified an area? Have you identified a kind of house? And then we go there. We go to that neighbourhood and we say, look, we have somebody who's got a 5-bed house down the road. Would you be interested in a swap? And like, that's really, I mean, essentially, this is a community platform. Like, and I'm hoping that a lot of these people that will be ended up swapping with each other might even know each other from their local GAA clubs or their golf clubs or whatever it is. So there's a large chance. Ireland, isn't it? They say, you know, there's only a couple of degrees of separation. Oh, well, I think we're finding that out now.
That is true. All right. Jackie Hurley, where can people find out more?
Goodneighbour.ie is the website. You'll find us on all our social channels as well. And hopefully you'll see plenty of us knocking around the place, maybe even knocking on your door. Who knows?
Jackie Hurley, I wish you all the best with it.
Interesting
new business. And we'll see how all that works out. And meanwhile, we can still see you on RTE, on the telly and radio.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
And you are very welcome back to the show. Now, we wear it, we value it, we put it in our homes, yet metal can be the trickiest of things to incorporate into design. There's a very fine line between tasteful and tacky. But whether it's light switches, picture frames, or tables, silver, bronze, and gold finishes are very, very popular. Well, here to tell us how to do it properly is Ventura Design and heavy metal fan, Arlene McIntyre.
Good afternoon.
Welcome back to the Home Show, Arlene. Now, this is one of these things because,
like metal on any furnishings have become really, really popular. We all have like tables or, you know, light fittings or yes. chandeliers, whatever, made of metal. But the days of kind of brass and brown furniture are long gone.
Yes.
What is the appeal, do you think, of metal?
It's really important. I think it's like, it's like one of the most important things to get right in your room. And I think if you walk into a room and you see all like a whole array of different metal finishes, for me, it's very jarring. So I think if you want that very considered, tailored look in your home where everything kind of just speaks to each other happily, you need to consider your metal finishes. So, for example, in your living room, let's just use that as an example. If you have a pendant light and it has a metal chrome finish, but then your lamps have a brass finish, that's not great. So you need to try and coordinate your finishes. I think that's rule number one to get that right.
Okay, so don't mix the different colours and finishes.
Yeah, try if you can to coordinate them and get them to match. So if you have spent a lot of money on your lamps and their brass, that's fine. You can keep those. Just make sure that all the other new metal finishes that you bring into the room have a warm tone to them in the metal finish.
Okay. Now, finish itself is very important because, as you say, some of these can be shiny chrome.
Yeah.
Some are dull, some are brushed.
Yes.
You know, steel and brushed gold.
Yes.
and all that. Can you mix and match the finish as well, or is that a no-no? Should everything be similar?
If you're starting from scratch, yes, you have an opportunity to really, you know, get the planning of the hardware right. Like a lot of that goes into this for anyone in this world, and you really do want to get your finishes right. So that is something really considered and thought through. But I think at the moment, the trends are leaning more away from really, really shiny hardware.
Mm.
So like shiny or very bright gold, like brass, is definitely something I'd steer away from. Or chrome can feel a little bit on the lesser expensive side, and it's a cooler tone in the metal world. So perhaps move away from anything too shiny and too bright.
Okay.
And I'd be kind of advising you to go into a more muted, understated metal finish.
Okay, so less of the kind of cheap and blingy.
Exactly.
Okay, so then we are left with these gold tones.
Yes.
So everything from the rose gold finish, which I have a particular thing about at the moment. I just love it.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of slightly pinky gold.
Yes.
To the golds and the bronzes and the brasses and all of that.
Yes.
So when is too much too much? You mentioned there a lampshade and a chandelier. Would you add in light switches there, picture frames?
Oh, everything. Like I would definitely ask, well, if you can and if the budget allows, I try and look at all your light socket switches to make sure that they're coming in a finish that coordinates with your light, you know, of the main kind of hardware tone in your pendants or in your lamps or your lamp tables, your coffee table.
Well, then you're into door handles then as well, aren't
exactly.
you?
Yeah. Your entire hardware is like something to definitely consider when you're planning your space.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got your mirror, and then you've got the frames on your artwork and all those things. So it's nice to get them coordinated.
Okay.
Having said that, I have been in lovely period homes where they've completely mixed and looks great, but that's more intentional. And then I think you go into newer homes and it might be more that the budget didn't allow, and perhaps they love the lamp, but it was in the wrong tone. So you get that too. So I think lean into one tone if you can. Say, make sure it's like 80% of one tone. And if there is that other 20% that's in the other, I think you can get away with that.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing about the period home, there's a lot of forgiveness in a very old house.
Correct.
Because you can say, oh, this was 18th century.
Yes.
Then the 19th century family did this, and then, you know, so you can kind of, it always looks, as you say, intentionally mismatched.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that intention is very, very important. Now, so what are the must-haves that we absolutely have to get right? Let's start at the front door, because the door furniture is very often metal.
Yes.
And are people going for you, finding your clients now, like the big door knocker, even if they've got their Ring doorbell?
Yeah.
Or, you know, do they love the kind of the look of it?
Definitely. Well, it depends on the size of the door. Like, for example, we're working on a period home and this client wants an absolutely massive knocker on the front door. It's ginormous. We have to source it. Perhaps we're going to have to get it made bespoke. It's that large. But I think it depends on the size of your front door. So you have to consider that too. You don't want your hardware to overtake the size of the door. It just won't look proportioned. So you need to get that right. You want it to add in a pop of metal if it's a smaller, normal, standard size door, as opposed to kind of dominating it.
Mm. So if you have a letterbox and a doorknob,
coordinate those,
and a kind of a knob to open the door.
Yes. They can't be in three different finishes.
They can't.
Okay. This is your opportunity to just coordinate them. Definitely.
Okay. Now, we have the lighting, I suppose, is a key thing. So I'm interested when you say, oh, the light switches should all be coordinated with it. I think sometimes we underestimate in our houses how many bits and bobs we have. I mean, every door has two handles.
Yeah.
One the outside, one the inside. And maybe two or three light switches if it's a big space.
Yes.
So it's a lot to kind of think about.
It totally is. It's an investment too. Like you got to look at your door hinges as well and try and coordinate them. So say if your handle is in a, say, brushed brass finish, for example, or an antique brass, which I personally love. I think I prefer that more than brushed brass. Then you need to kind of coordinate your hinges so that they match the doorknob and the lock. That matches the door handle.
Oh my goodness.
And the hinge.
Right, there's a whole other section I hadn't even thought about. The hinges.
And your door, like your window handles, you know, on your windows, that you'll get caught there as well. Try and consider that too.
Okay. And like this is stuff that's there to stay. So you need to give it a little bit of time because what you don't want to happen is you just finish with whatever you can afford and you stick it in and then you're looking at it then forever. Because I mean, we don't change that stuff very often, do we?
No. Yeah. Just get it right from the start.
When it comes to metals, and we're doing coordinating fabrics, we've got a sofa, so all that stuff is kind of sitting there, that metally hardware stuff. Mm-hmm. Should we deliberately then choose much softer textiles? And are there colours that work best with those gold and brass tones?
No, I think brass and gold and antique brass and bronze, they are just the most flexible tones you can work with. They work in a really modern environment to a really old period home. So I don't think you need to really consider your textures tying in with your hardware. I think it blends in with absolutely anything. It's super versatile. And the same with nickel. I would be a big fan of nickel as opposed to chrome.
Okay, what's the difference there now? I'm trying to picture nickel as
nickel
opposed to chrome.
Nickel is also, it is more on that kind of silver side of hardware, but it has a warm kind of undertone in it. So it feels like there's a gold undertone coming through the nickel.
Interesting.
It's so beautiful.
Okay.
And it would be a personal favorite and definitely more pricey, but beautiful and wears beautifully over time.
Right. You can find all those hints and tips and everything else about Arlene on Ventura Design, Ventura Interiors on Instagram. And you can have a little look around her store as well, which is always very pretty to look at. Now, that's all we have time for on the latest Home Show podcast. Hope you enjoyed all of my guests and everything we discussed there. I certainly did. If you'd like to get in touch with us or maybe suggest a guest or a topic you'd like to hear us cover on the Home Show, it is thehomeshow@newstalk.com, and you can find me over on X and on Instagram. And I know lots of you like to get in touch there and suggest things and talk about the podcast, and we love hearing from you. My thanks to producer Aoife Breen. Stephen McClune was on sound. We will be back here next week with a new episode, and we look forward to your company then.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday at 5 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.